Hello, everyone. Welcome to Oneness Conversations. And I'm here today with Neil Bakshi, and we're going to be learning a lot from him. Now, I've listened to a lot of his interviews, watched a few of his interviews, and they have been quite insightful. But I'm going to be asking him questions which maybe he's been asked before, maybe he haven't, but it's about learning more, and I'm excited to have this conversation with you. How are you doing, Neil? Nice to have you on. Thank you. Welcome.
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on, Raul. I'm excited to be here. I have so much I think we can dive into and explore, and I'm excited to share some cool things with you as well. So I'd love to get into it and just talk about an amazing conversation on oneness, because yes, I think that it's something you and I both really connect to and come from a different angle probably, and it all links back into the same singularity in which it's from. So hopefully the listeners can get a couple golden nuggets out of it too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure they will. And I just want to give a shout out to Vinay Mehtaji, who introduced us. I'm glad he did. So just want to give him a thank you.
Absolutely. Second that shout out, Vinay. You are an angel in and of yourself. So thank you.
I want to know, what paved the way for spirituality to enter into your life? Were you born into a spiritual family, or is it something that you've ended up cultivating as time has gone on?
So I was very grateful and very blessed to be born into a family that had really raised me on spirituality. So my mom grew up, and both my parents grew up in India. They moved to the US, and my mom really grew up in the Sikh tradition. And eventually, sort of in 1992, actually, when I was born, my dad joined a path called Self-Realization Fellowship, which was created by Paramahansa Yogananda, an Indian guru who came to the US in 1920 to basically teach scientific yogic techniques of meditation in the West. And so my dad joined that path, and very soon after, my mom joined him on that path. And I actually was born, or rather raised, meditating since the age of 5. And so they would really take me to the meditation chapel, teach me meditation at home. And so it was, I was very entrenched in that aspect of spirituality. And that's really how I grew up.
Oh, nice. So your mom was from a Sikh background. How did she marry up the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda Ji and obviously Guru Nanak Dev Ji, and how did that play? That's quite interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's so interesting, because my dad actually says one of the greatest things he was attracted to in my mom was her spirituality and her. She would go to the Gurdwara regularly, really pray, and it was one of my dad's favorite parts of my mom. And so she really would pray every morning before going to work, and she was a high powered woman in what she did. She worked in healthcare finance, and it's amazing. But she married it up because I think Yogananda's teachings are quite universal and inclusive, because all of his teachings actually link the Bhagavad Gita to the Bible. And he's basically saying what they're saying in this Gita commentary is this, what they're saying in this Bible versus this, they actually are saying the exact same thing. And so he brings a level of connection. And so what he really sort of emphasizes is that there's many paths, but ultimately one truth. And so he basically says, you know, it really doesn't matter what religion or creed or where you're from, we are all collective, global, United States. It's he calls the United States of the world, or the United States of the international, or something like that, where we are all this collective body that we may have different upbringings or roots or belief systems, but there's ultimately many paths and one truth that leads you to divine source, union, oneness, God, whatever you want to call it.
I do agree with that. It all stems from Vedanta, from the Upanishads, and all that they've taught is really, it emanates from that. And then even from the Western side, there's lots of similarities. There's obvious differences. We can call that diversity instead of differences, diversity of expression. I've kind of read bits of autobiography of a yogi. I read a bit, and I don't know if you find this, but I think I read it too late on. Like, I wish I read it in the beginning of my journey rather than later on, because then I found that it didn't fascinate me, the things he was talking about. It would have fascinated me years ago. I recognize that. But like, it came a bit too late, I think, for me.
It always comes at divine timing. Whenever you need it in your journey, I think he has some amazing stories in there for sure. And so being raised on this path, he actually has written so much. It far exceeds just the autobiography of Yogi. He has an entire collection of writings. I'm like, how did someone write this before, like within less than 60 years of their life? Just like, you really must have been an open channel for the divine to really flow. He's written these like lessons that I actually get mailed to my house every 2 weeks. And every lesson is on something different, and it's on some different aspect of life. And it's about how to spiritualize your daily life in all aspects of life. And I think his teachings are just like, it expresses itself in many ways. So he has his amazing stories that he has in his autobiography. But then I think the teachings also are very relevant to just how do you live a life that is allowing you to bring more sacredness into your life, or rather make your life more sacred as an offering in and of itself.
That's very interesting. And yeah, I agree. Like, they've written so much. Like, I look at Swami Vivekanandaji, and like he lived, I think, till he was 40, maybe shy of 40, in fact. And yeah, he has, you know, so much work. I mean, they really devoted their life to spirituality, like truly devoted it. I mean, it's incredible. But yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, and he has done... I have read bits of his work on the Bhagavad Gita. He's done a commentary, I think, Paramahansa Yogananda-ji. And I found some of the things that he has said in there very insightful, very, well, you know, really unique, actually. I'm going to go straight into the deep end here. And I'm going to ask you, what is the singularity of oneness? And both philosophically and experientially as well.
I love it. I love that you asked the experiential part of it too, because I have such an interesting story to share on that aspect. So the singularity of oneness philosophically, I believe, is that it starts with this aspect of, if you want to call it light or creation, but the thing is, it far transcends just what I'm able to express in words as me saying light. And so what I mean by that, just kind of giving you an example, is if I went to two hydrogen molecules and an oxygen molecule in the ocean and I said, hey, you're wet, they wouldn't understand what I'm saying. The language that I'm communicating in just does not compute with their frequency. They would be like, we're atoms, we're electrons. Like, we do not understand what you mean when you say we're wet. And so when I say that there is a singularity of consciousness, I mean, it's a zero point. It's where there is nothing but simultaneously everything. And within that nothingness exists everything that ever was, will be, can be, but it's simultaneously nothing. And so philosophically, the oneness is, if you want to consider it light, let's consider it light. And that light then becomes fractalized. Much like when you put a prism in front of a white light, you'll start to get a fractal of rainbows. Well, that one white light became an entire swath of colors, right? Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, violet. And so similarly, as it goes through this prism, it becomes more fractalized. And if I put it through more prisms, it would become even more fractalized. And so this singularity or oneness is the aspect of creation that we are all born from. And it goes so deep. I can talk about causal planes, or I can talk about just higher densities of existence. But ultimately, this singularity becomes more and more fractalized. And as it becomes more and more fractalized, in my view, it becomes more and more dense. And with density, I mean literally dense. Like, there's 8 billion humans. We're very dense, opaque beings. Mm-hmm. And as you pull that fractalization back up into itself, you get back into that oneness or that singularity, which is ultimately what I believe an amazing aspect of what meditation is able to offer, because it pulls me back into that state of basically seeing between the overlapping thoughts of the egoic illusion of Neil, and coming into this space of, union, which is the definition of yoga in and of itself. It's union. It's this feeling of union in not just my body, but transcendent of the body. It's the spirit connecting back into its source. And another analogy I like to use is sort of, if you think about a spotlight that's shining down, let's say on Earth, and this spotlight is broken up into billions of little tiny squares. And each one of those squares is shining down on Earth. And that's an individual that's in a body. But if you look back at that spotlight, it's all from the same collective spotlight. We all have this spark of light within us that is from this massive emanating light. And so that's kind of this aspect of this oneness of singularity or consciousness that is tried to be explained in words. And then the experiential side of it, right?
Yeah. Yes.
That I think is sort of where this aspect of meditation also comes in, because we can talk about this kind of stuff until the cows come home, and we can study at end about it. We can read so many different philosophers or spiritualists or texts or watch videos. But I think I would never want anyone to actually just take my word for it. In fact, I don't think anyone should do that with anything in their life, because I think the only way to actually understand something, and also why we're here to live the human existence, is to fully experience the breadth of it, be it the breadth of emotions or life situations we go to. And if, for example, I told you ice cream was sweet, but you never tasted ice cream, you would just be like, oh, Neil told me ice cream was sweet, so that must be sweet. But you wouldn't really understand what it meant to be sweet. You wouldn't really understand, okay, this is the texture, the flavor, the temperature, the sweetness of it. And so it's that aspect of having the full experiential understanding that allows you to genuinely, capital K, know and feel what that oneness is. And so I had this rich experience. I went into darkness for a week, and I really did, you couldn't do nothing except be with your thoughts and meditate. There's nothing to do there. And it was an experience that I had that was genuinely me feeling that oneness. And I had an experience where I also saw it, if I can say it was like a vision in a way. And it was in a completely open plane where there was nothing there. And far off in the distance, there's just a dot that is emanating light. And there's nothing there. But as you get closer and go into it, you look inside of this dot of light. And within this dot, it contains every aspect of reality, every universe, star, planet, galaxy, reality, human, alternate life form, and alternate timeline, every possible timeline that any human or any being in any reality can live. It contained within it a totality of everything. But simultaneously, it was nothing. And it's almost like if I put a circle in front of you and I say, step into the circle. Well, did you enter the circle from the beginning or the end? Well, you don't know. It has no beginning and no end. And it's that feeling of, it is a singularity of unity that has no beginning and no end. It is simultaneously nothing, but within it contains everything, which is the most beautiful paradox of, I think, our existence, and simultaneously the expression of what I believe spirituality to be experientially.
Very, very interesting. And I remember one of my first major spiritual breakthrough was actually meditating and seeing a point of light. I had this kind of inner voice. It wasn't my own. I would like to believe it was mine, but it wasn't. But it was like, even this, I am not. Because I was making the light into a form, if that makes sense. That's when I would say that experience of seeing the heart of existence all in one go, and then coming back into the, like what I would say, into the body, into the awareness of the body. It was interesting. So it's quite cool. And the fact that you did a retreat, 7-day retreat, did you say?
Yeah, it was 132 hours, so 6 nights, 7 days, yeah.
Wow. You know what? I don't think people can cope with 30 minutes in the dark room. I mean, the only time they like things when it's dark, and it's to go to sleep, and for you to do that, that's remarkable.
Yeah,
it shows you got a lot of strength mentally.
It was intense. And it's funny because growing up, I was terrified of the dark. I wouldn't go into the basement alone. I wouldn't take the garbage can to the end of the driveway at night alone. I was terrified of the dark. And I guess eventually you just grow up. But I think this is beyond growing up. And it was something that really called me to it. And it's something that's also been done in ancient traditions throughout time as a rite of passage and initiation that in and of itself, I think really felt like an initiation because the ancient Buddhists did it. You went into caves, the Buddha, it's even believed the prophet Muhammad received the first verse of the Quran in a cave. The ancient Egyptians and ancient Mayans, the Kogi tribe of Colombia still actually take children when they're born and put them in a cave for the first 9 years of their life, who are selected to be their highest form of healers known as mamas. And so I think it's something that really does something to the consciousness ultimately to see what it is.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I know for sure Ramana Maharishi, I think after his awakening, he was in a cave for a good couple of years at least before he was kind of dragged out to start teaching. But the story is that apparently he was so engrossed in meditation for that many years that, you know, there were insects eating into him. He was that kind of into that experience of the self or
Samadhi.
Brahman. Really Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Yeah, you mentioned the cave thing, and you know, I think and caves have a big significance in India too. There are, I think, you see many ashrams, or you see even like the deities, they're in caves actually. So it's a massive significance. But yeah, massive respect for doing that. I mean, that's incredible. Now I would like to ask, from this singularity of oneness, there's a few things. One was, so would you say that we are different to this singularity, or is it just the appearance that we're different? What is it? Is there a separation, or is there not a separation?
So in my own personal view and experience, the separation is born of the egoic identity of separation. Mm-hmm. It's the illusion of separation is as I view it. We are not innately different from this singularity, this light of singularity. We all are born of this singularity, and we contain the singularity within us. It's like taking, if I go into the ocean and I take a glass of water out of the ocean, is it different than the ocean? No, it's the same water that was in the ocean. It's simply in a glass. It's in a different vessel, and we're putting that vessel here. But similarly, that's how I view every single person in this world. I view every single person as a teacher, as me, as the divine, as that light, as that singularity. And I think that's really what we're missing a little bit today as we go about our global world and seeing different conflicts and divisiveness across gender or race or sexuality or creed. And I think it's that aspect of seeing ourselves in the other is lost. And I think that is the beauty of what kind of pulls us back into remembering that everyone is our brother. Everyone is our sister. We are one being.
The ground of being is the same. It reminds me of Kabirji's, one of his lines. I think it's in the Guru Granth Sahib, that the drop is in the ocean and the ocean is in the drop. You know, that whole thing. I know it's, I think Rumi also has something similar as well. But yeah, it's fascinating. Very beautiful that you mentioned that. And I agree with you that there's this illusion of separation. And that's what I mainly talk about on my podcast, is that, yes, there is this relative reality, this transactional reality. We have to be different on appearance. And thank God we're a bit different on appearance, because, you know, if everyone was just the same, we wouldn't enjoy each other's company or enjoy the material objects that we get to enjoy. I wouldn't be able to enjoy that chocolate cake that I love to eat. I can't eat it as much anymore, but you know, but you know, but innately I should realize that when I go back into myself, that actually we're all one. And like you said beautifully, it doesn't matter how different people are, we're all one. And yeah, we have more in common than we have different. I know that, we probably have another election cycle coming up in America. I know it's coming up. I think it's happening in the UK as well. Man. So India's having its election. So I know it's going to be a time of extreme divisiveness. But at the end of the day, regardless of who wins, regardless of the journey there, if we all remember that, you know, the person that is in the opposition or so-called opposition is the same as us, I think it won't turn into hate. It becomes into a careful discernment of who you want to pick rather than, oh, well, I hate that person, hence I'm not voting for that person type of thing. So, yeah, prayer is that we're more loving and we see more from that unity. So I like that, man. I like how it can become part of the world rather than separate, you know.
Completely. And I think the beauty of it is we're not here to... So I believe this separation is born out of the need of the egoic consciousness to exist in this world of duality that we live in here in this third dimensional plane. And to that point, the ego isn't something to be disliked or wanting to be killed off because, for example, as you correctly stated, well, if there is no more... quote illusion of separation, well, then you wouldn't be able to enjoy the chocolate cake. You and the chocolate cake would already be one. So you wouldn't really be able to experience the chocolate cake in its full experience of being a delicious chocolate cake. And so I think that that is part of the beauty of living the human experience to be able to, the ego just wants to be heard. It wants to be understood. It genuinely just wants to be loved. Which is what we all want here.
Wow.
And I think, how can we bring that level of love to the ego to then allow us to experience one another from a space of genuine curiosity, care, compassion, love, and joy? And I think that kind of is also where this aspect of Leela or the divine play comes in as well. It's since when did we really decide to take life so seriously? And I think that is a whole nother aspect of what this brings into the picture. But just, yeah, something that came up as you're talking about that.
Yeah, no, beautiful. Thank you. And now I'd like to know more about how did the angel numbers come into it? I know there's a story behind this and maybe you want to share that as well. But eventually what I want to get us to is how we can link this singularity of oneness to the angel numbers. If you can make that link for us.
Sure. So I will go into a 2-second overview of this story and make it super fast, maybe a little more than 2 seconds. So in 2020, my mom very suddenly and unexpectedly passed on. That created a catalyst where I went back into meditation, into my spiritual roots more than I ever had before, just to seek peace and solace. In the first 3 months of 2021, I started to receive a message from outside of myself for the first time ever, really, in meditation, really ever. And it was the message that said, you need to help people. It was the same message every day for 3 straight months. And I had no idea what that meant, how I was supposed to go about doing that. I was working at Goldman Sachs in investment banking. I was like Wall Street as Wall Street gets, like super hardcore in that mode, like, oh yeah, yeah. And what happened was, because I work with numbers so much, like Bloomberg is on my screen, I have like 4 monitors in front of my face, CNBC tickers, Excel financial models, numbers are a huge part of what I did. And what would happen is as that year progressed, I started to notice these numbers in mostly repeating patterns. So it was like 2-2-2, 3-3-3, 4-4-4, 5-5-5. And like, it wasn't just like twice or 3 times a day. It would, no exaggeration, be 20, 30 times a day, to the point where I was like, okay, I'm a fairly logical person. I'm analytical. Like I'm a banker. Mm-hmm. Like what is going on? This is just downright weird. This isn't normal. And eventually I started to research about what is this, right? Why am I seeing this? I eventually came to understand that Pythagoras, as known, ancient Greek philosopher, is known as the father of numerology. And he says that every number in the universe carries an innate vibration. And when put into specific patterns or sequences or palindromes, that message is amplified. And the way I kind of think about it is you take single letters and you put them into strings and they become words. and they become sentences. And so it's almost like you're being communicated to in a different form of language, essentially. And as that went on, eventually I developed a skill to communicate with angels on a far deeper level. But I call them angels simply because people were calling them angel numbers. I had no word for it. I was just seeing these repeating numbers and these patterns, but people colloquially and collectively call them angel numbers. So I was like, oh, okay, angels. Well, how this relates back into oneness and singularity, and I think I'll even take a little bit of a step back further to talk about just this concept of angels as well. Angels are referenced in every culture, every religion, every tradition around the world through history. All Abrahamic religions mention angels. The Aboriginals, which is the oldest tradition on earth, mentions ancestral beings who are unseen teachers. The Bodhisattvas of Buddhism are basically archangelic beings of Buddhism who remove suffering and fear and guide people back towards the light. The Druids also believe that there's four elementals of nature, and the fifth elemental is eventually an invisible being, which is likely some form of angelic guidance. The Devas in India are lesser forms of the force of gods. And similarly, Krishna, you can even consider him as an angel of Arjuna. And so if you think about angels as a guide or a protector, but what it is they're specific to you and your individual experience and how it relates back to that singularity of oneness. Well, I believe that they are the heartbeats of that singularity of oneness. They are offering little pulses into us saying, hey, this is just a reminder that you are part of the singularity, and we will try to communicate, or I will try to communicate with you in any way just to give you a reminder that I am here. I am not different than the singularity. I am part of the singularity. If we talk about the higher densities and fractalizations, well, if we pull the fractalization of us humans back up into itself, into the singularity, well, then you have a higher density layer of fractal. And that fractal is your angel or your higher self. It is all one. It is all the same concept. There's just many ways to express it and explain it. And so that's how I believe it connects into that singularity.
Interesting. So if I threw a curveball here, because you mentioned Krishna, Sri Krishna and Arjuna, we would say Sri Krishna is liberated. He's attained moksha. So how can he come down into, well, I'm using language here, but take my language lightly because you have to correct me. But how can someone that is liberated come back into a certain form? Then would that mean they're not liberated? Or is there something a bit beyond that we need to explore, you know, type of thing?
Sure. So if we take that instance, well, Krishna is an incarnation of Vishnu, right? And so, well, if Vishnu is all realized and all knowing and all God, how does he come back into being? Well, I believe consciousness goes in a spiral evolution of dynamics. And so as the consciousness evolves and expands, it goes through the various planes of existence, physical, astral, causal. And ultimately, as you get back into this state of being an ascended master, so to speak, you can choose to come back and incarnate in a physical human body. So to not just experience the human experience, but to also offer guidance and assistance and support to other beings who are in their journey and relative experience of consciousness to serve all for the highest good of all. And it's ultimately you are serving that oneness from which you are born. So that's kind of my view on that.
Awesome. So basically, even though they're still liberated, but they can make that choice of coming back to help certain people. I think I can go with that, actually. Yeah, I think I can vibe with that because it just makes sense. I mean, there's a whole thing about the inner guru, and although the inner guru is technically formless, but it can also be in the form of a master that you, or a guru or a deva that you really are attuned to. So like, for example, when people say they've had the darshan of Shivji, instead of me being instead of doubting it, I can actually see, well, it's still coming from that one source. It's that one same being. And yes, it's chosen. Of course, if that person is a devotee of Shiva, it's not going to come in as the Buddha. Do you know what I mean? It's going to come in a shiver. It makes sense. So yeah, I think I can vibe with that because I've heard of people who've had experiences of the Devis and Devtas and of Shri Krishna or of their gurus. So I, you know, a lot of people, I don't know if you've heard of the Radhaswami group, but they will say that their Guruji, they say, you know, Babaji's come to collect me when they're about to die. And they actually see their guru. And it's and not just in that kind of belief, but so many other people have said, oh, you know, my guru's come to collect me. And it's, yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting.
It's, and so that brings me to another point. There's an amazing ascended master, guru of mine as well. His name is Mahavatar Babaji, and he is known to people say that the incarnation of Babaji is really ageless. He appears as this young, very fit being that takes the body of a man who roams the Himalayan mountains and who has caves in the Himalayan mountains. And so he is this ascended master, essentially. He has reached that state of divine union with all that is. However, he comes back into human form to offer this level of guidance, support, to basically show, be that inspiration, be the embodiment that I think at times people may need, right? In order to view themselves as that is attainable for me. Because I think for so many, and I know people in my own sphere who are always like, oh, you have to be really advanced to like do X, Y, Z. It's like, well, believe that you are advanced. Believe that this is possible for you. And I think it offers that dose of inspiration and embodiment that so we all need all here.
Yeah. I've heard stories of people seeing Mahavatar Babaji. I've heard stories of, which is interesting to say the least. The reason why I say it's interesting, how can people see the same person and then point, oh, yeah, this is a person that I've seen, like in different periods of time? It is quite incredible.
There's so much that we don't know, right? We just do not know. And we think we know everything. And we've been on this dot spinning around for such a short period of existence. And what we believe is the 4.6 billion year existence of Earth. And the thing is, we just don't know. It's all conjecture, story, theory that we can hope to create. And I think the beauty of it is how can we start to discover it for ourselves? And as you say, experience it for ourselves.
Yeah, I'm always aligned with whatever science says. And I think we should always go along with science. But at the same time, I think science has become, again, it's today science is more materialism. So it's materialistic. So in the sense of unless you can explain by matter, it doesn't exist. And I think that's a wrong way of...
It's Newtonian physics.
Yeah,
it's Newtonian. Yeah.
You know, what about the subject?
Exactly. What about the subject? And I think science and spirituality actually are not different at all. They connect completely in every aspect, in every way. In fact, spirituality is scientific in and of itself. If you even think of looking at nature, we see geometric patterns everywhere we look. We see the Fibonacci sequence even in the way whales feed in the ocean. The creation of nature is scientific, is geometric. It is created of all of the Platonic solids that we see, but simultaneously, all aspects of spirituality connect into these scientific modalities. But the thing is, for so long, we have discredited the belief in things like quantum physics because it simply cannot be seen. Quantum is basically the unseen or subatomic level. And even amazing intellectuals like Einstein, Nobel Prize winners, Niels Bohr, all of these people had some form of spiritual belief in their life. And that is the part that we miss from the scientific equation or we sort of push aside. But if we look at them in conjunction, we actually see that spirituality and science are not separate. They are connected and unionized.
Yes. I do agree. I think, again, like I said, people shouldn't be so closed-minded. And I've catched myself, catch myself often, you know, I'll be like, oh, this is all nonsense. But then I'm like, then I think about it. I spend some time thinking about it, contemplating. I'm like, actually, I shouldn't dismiss something if I don't know it, if I've not gone even further in it. It's something I should let it find me, or I don't need to concentrate on it. I don't have to like dismiss it. And I think what's happened today, and it's just the state of the world, is like, if you don't know it, just dismiss it. And I'm like, no. If you don't know it, you don't know it. And it's best to just say you don't know and leave it open. And I really like the way you've explained everything, by the way. It's really, really nice. And I liked how you've linked the ancient numbers to the singularity of consciousness. How does the theory of karma and reincarnation fit into this? Does it even matter in all of this?
It's an awesome question. I think it does fit into all of this. And I think that, at least in my view, we are, karma, very simply put, is a law of very rudimentary in words. Let's say cause and effect, right? It's a wheel of one action creates a knock-on effect to another equal and opposing result, similar to Newtonian physics as we know it. And so what I think is, as we are born of this initial separation, let's say as we are created as a soul or having a desire for individualistic expression that is created from the singularity of consciousness, we begin to embody ourselves, let's say, in form. And eventually we take, because we have a choice of free will, I'll call it a choice, and that choice is we'll get into that later, but we may not know how that choice works. And we make decisions that may be rooted in our egoic illusion of identification, of separation. And as we continue to experience the experience of separation in ourselves, being this, say, individual or human, we make these decisions that may have counter effects, right? So let's say I make a decision that hurts a relationship, or I make a decision that hurts someone in their life, or whatever that is. Well, it will have an equal and opposing effect. And that may take hold in different forms, in different ways, either in this lifetime or in another lifetime. And I think a way to think about that is there's a timeline of human existence that's experiencing itself as a collective. And we are popping in and out of this timeline at different times, in different roles, in different bodies, experiencing different things. And ultimately, the karmic patterns of that are what has occurred in our, let's call it past, but it's all occurring in a one singular moment. But what has occurred in a maybe, quote, past life that I'm carrying on a karmic deed or vow that needs to be ultimately realized. And as we go through this experience of consciousness experiencing itself in a spiral dynamic form, maybe it starts with things like needing our basic necessities met, and it evolves to feeling included in society, similar to Maslow's pyramid. There's different forms of explanation of consciousness. But I think ultimately we are experiencing ourselves, and we're learning. That's all it is. It's a soul evolutionary understanding of learning. And that karma can be realized, again, as I say, in that same lifetime. So let's say I slap my friend. Well, maybe I'm going to get slapped back across the face. That is an instantaneous return of karma. Nice. Or it can be realized maybe in a different lifetime, depending on the intensity of what occurred. So maybe in another lifetime, it can be a physical illness that maybe someone is born with, or someone develops later in life that is a direct result of something that happened in a different lifetime. And so I think that is sort of where karma comes in. It's this teacher. It's not something to be resented, but it's something to actually be understood as a teacher and part of our own growth. And I think the beautiful thing that breaks karma is forgiveness, and ultimately self-forgiveness. It all comes down to self-forgiveness, because it is just you experiencing yourself as the part of the creator power. And so how do you fully forgive yourself for everything that has been self-imposed or self-created in your life?
Very beautiful. I like that. Forgiveness is definitely that breaking karma. And just to kind of, again, throw a bit of a curveball here, I'm someone that kind of believes more or less that there is the appearance of free will, but actually we don't really make any choices. The choices have already been made, one through the brain, obviously, but even the selection of what we can do is rather determined. For example, where I was born that was determined, unless my mom decided to go on holiday, which probably wasn't going to happen on the ninth month. That's so many things are determined. When you mention free will, can you explain? Because you did mention you're going to go into that. So I'm going back a step to say, well, what really is a choice then in this?
Yeah. So I specifically say choice of free will. And so what I mean by that is the choice is quite simple. The choice is quite black or white, in my view. It is a choice to align our will with divine will. And so my analogy for this one is, let's say you have an actor who's playing a role in a musical and you have a director. Well, the director is really the one who is directing the show here. He's going to tell the actor where to stand, what lines to say, how to say them. And the actor, well, the actor is just playing the role. And that's kind of how I view it. The director is the singularity source of all creation. The actor is me in the body of Neil right here. And I can go off script and the director will say, hey, cut, we're retaking that one. That's not how this one goes. And that is the choice. The choice is either I align myself with the divine will, which is the director energy, or I can go off script but that's not really the choice because it's not part of the experience that the play is creating in its optimal runtime. So that's kind of how I view it. It's a choice of free will, but it's an alignment of that free will with divine will. That is what the choice ultimately is.
Yeah, interesting. And I vibe with that. For example, even in that situation, the actor can do improv. But again, the director can say, cut, mate, what are you doing? you went a bit too far here. I thought you were going to smack that person. So it's interesting because obviously, well, I say that philosophically, it's the number one thing that I found in conversations with people from the Abrahamic religions, especially. They believe that we have total free will. And we are responsible for those actions. But I think karma is a lot more compassionate in the sense of, you'll get to deal with it. But at the end of the day, it also, you know, your intentions matter. The circumstances you're in is also considered, you know. And we see that. And I think the reason why, and I think a lot of, you know, coming from a Hindu background, a lot of us don't really know the vastness of it is because we probably haven't read the Mahabharata or Ramayana. And in there, you can see how what someone did in like five lifetimes ago is playing on in Ram, you know, Sri Ram's life right now. You know, but unless you've read that stuff, it doesn't make sense otherwise. Interesting. But yeah, if you have anything to add, please do.
No, I think it's it just comes back to me to like sort of not like it reminds me of just everything being a reflection of the self. And for a little while in the beginning of my spiritual journey, I would hear things like, oh, like everyone is a mirror for you, or everything is a reflection. And I would oscillate between seeing that and not seeing that. And I'd be like, nope, this person is just an effing idiot. But like, eventually I was like, no, it's actually not the case. Like if every single person within it contains all of creation, then it is simply an aspect of me that is being reflected back to me that I have stuffed inside some shadow closet because I don't want to bear witness to it because of the pain that it would cause when I look at this shadow side of myself. But that's why I think, how can we really understand not just others, but ourselves on a deeper level? Well, I think this is where things like the golden rule, for example, come into timeless wisdom. Well, treating others like we want to treat ourselves, why is that? Well, because they are us. We are them, and the aspects are ultimately being reflected back to us. So that's sort of what you just triggered in my mind as you talk about reflection.
Yeah, the golden rule is quite true. I think if we all actually truly practice that, this would be it would be a nicer place at the very least. So I want to kind of ask, how important is devotion in your life? Because I get that sense from you. from our conversation already. So I wanted to know really, how important is devotion? How does it play on in your life? And has it grown, especially after 2020, you know, when there's a tragedy that you face, when did it kick in? And has it been there in the background? And then was just like, Neil, I'm actually here.
You are so full of with the best questions I have ever been asked on any show. Truly, the depth of your questions that resonate with the deepest part of just spirit, not just me as a soul, but spirituality in general and what it means to be a spiritual person. Amazing questions. And I'll say in the beginning of my life, devotion was not key at all, right? I was a young kid. My parents were taking me to learn meditation, teaching me. I was doing it like I was like going to karate class or like trying to learn the piano. Like it's not something I was very passionate about. Yeah. And I sort of like drifted away from it as I worked in banking and became fascinated with all the money and needing to be successful and needing to be someone and external validation. And after my mom passed on, and I started to really feel the power of meditation and the peace it brings. And then when I started to communicate with angels ultimately, and then connect into I call it God, right? It's a very divisive word. And I don't usually say it because I'm like, oh, are people going to take this one? Cause it's like, has a connotation to it, but that's the energy to me. It's like that force energy that moves, but it's not the common way most people perceive that word. But the when I started to feel that energy for the first time and see it in my life start to work genuine magic in ways that I can't even begin to fathom, people I was meeting, clients that were coming to me, my business that was suddenly growing out of nowhere, feeling a deep level of peace and connection, getting downloads and just feeling so connected to God consciousness, I started to really develop this sense of love, like love that transcends any kind of romantic love I've ever had. Like it even transcends like the kind of love I had for my mom, which is like unconditional love. It's like, but it is that kind of love. And then, and then I got to the point where I was like, yeah, like this is like the number one goal of my life to like, I gotta just focus on my own self-realization and focusing on connecting into that God consciousness energy every single day and give all of my life to that energy, because it is not me. I am the actor. The director is writing my script. And what happens if I surrender my life to that energy? And it has become, devotion is number 1, 2 in my life, right? Number one is the connection to God consciousness. Number two is devotion. It doesn't happen one without the other. The two work in tandem and they're a duo. And that's why I think your question is really deep, because not many people get that deep and that level who aren't actually fully aware of that. So thank you for asking that.
Oh, no, you're welcome. You're welcome. And I used to avoid the word God. I would say just in the space of maybe a couple of months now, I've been kind of really comfortable with it, because I'm like, yeah, I know what that means. And if somebody questions me on it, I can give my definition.
Yeah.
As much as I can.
Out of curiosity, what is your definition, if I can ask you?
Oh, so I would say it is ultimately, God is just formless awareness. It's awareness of awareness itself. And that is, I wouldn't like to say space, but that's the only way to describe it, is this infinite space of formlessness. And as you mentioned, it's that nothingness that goes into everything. And, you know, I've seen it, I think, on your website, and I think I've heard you say it now as well. And that's essentially it. All forms, this existence that we see, is just a manifestation of that one, which is why I kind of, and yeah, you can have devotion to that, because everything is then divine. Everything is from the, you know, pen that I write with to yes. the beautiful eyes of my son and the embrace of my wife and the silly IMs at work and, you know, like, all that stuff. One can use as devotion. So I think, So then everything becomes God, so to speak.
Yeah.
Not gods, I would say, but just that one God. But yes, yeah. if someone wanted to push me and say, but everything is different. Yeah, then you love different gods then. Still the one for me. But yeah, and I think so that is what I, and this, when I say formless awareness, it's incredibly vast, where there is no beginning, there is no end. We've talked about this before the podcast recorded. It is that timelessness.
Yeah,
it's, I mean, when you connect with that, then there's no looking back. Then there's no, I can't return back to the Rahul that denied all of this years ago. And I'm glad I denied it, because I wouldn't come to this accepting place now. So
yeah, exactly.
So yeah, that is my, in a nutshell, but I follow more of the kind of Advaita Vedanta type of worldview or philosophy, that it's nirgun, but there is a place for sagun, there is a place for the attributes. Yes, it's ultimately attributeless, but to get to that state of attributeless, I don't think it's for everyone either. Yeah. So I have to, that's where I think compassion comes in. I understand that people will need the sagun, they will need the attributes. You know, it's good. It's necessary. You know,
totally. It's different for everyone, right? It is everyone's own individual personal experience, and the beauty of the human experience is that there's no one right answer. In fact, there's over 7 billion right answers, and they're all different, and they're all beautiful in their own right. And one of my favorite views on human consciousness is: you have a heart, and you have a liver. And you have a heart cell and you have a liver cell. And if I take your liver cell and I put it in the heart, and if I take your heart cell and I put it in the liver, your body won't operate to its full optimized capacity that it could if your liver cell's in the liver and your heart cell's in the heart. And that is how I perceive the collective body of human consciousness. We are all individual cells playing a role here. And maybe in one organ or one role, we need to be in this sort of manner, and another organ and another role, we are behaving in a different manner. And the beauty is, all of us fulfilling the roles that we need to be fulfilling make the collective body of human consciousness operate to its most optimal degree. And I think that's sort of very similar in terms of not everyone needs that other aspect of it. It's what is right for you, what allows you to operate most optimally.
I agree. And I think this is where I wish there was a little bit more unity in the spiritual field. And the reason why I say that is because, for example, if I know somebody's going through something in life, I can say, oh, you know what? Go to Neil. You don't come to me. I can't help you. My podcast is not going to do anything for you. Go to Neil. He'll help you in this. And I wish that there was a bit more unity and collaboration in that sense, that we recognize whenever someone's, say, ready for something or they need something, that we point them in that direction. And I often find that people don't, like, there's people that are stuck in a spiritual institution, just, I mean, one could call it faith, but I would call it more so just they don't know where else to go. For example, I have a lot of people that come in with mental health issues. And I'm like, well, go to a therapist before you start meditating, because meditation is not going to help you. It can help you if you go along with the therapy. So those type of things, like, a lot of people don't do that. They're like, oh, you know, stay with me, you know, listen to my podcast. This is the only place you can find peace. And but I feel like there should be more collaboration. And I would hopefully, you know, that happens more and more.
I think it is. I think we're headed to a place in a world where that is happening. And it's funny, because I had a personal experience like this, because I teach different workshops. And so I own a yoga studio in New Jersey where I teach breath work, and I teach different sort of, let's call it, healing workshops, emotional, mental, spiritual, and talk about angels, things like that. And I was like, oh, like, I'm going to make it a thing to, you know, do more workshops and teach more stuff. And then when I was in this dark retreat, the message, I received a message that was like, no, like, you don't need to continue to do more. You bring in other people who are also experts in their field. And so I was like, wow, that makes my life simpler. That makes that helps me uplift other people in sharing their very special gifts and bring them exposure into the world. And it's a win-win for everyone. And it's like you're uplifting everyone else and yourself, and you're not grinding yourself to the bone. And it's everyone has a gift. You get to just help them express their gift and show them to the world. And so I'm like, wow. So I invited 6 different amazing people who I know who teach different modalities, from astrology to numerology to energy healing to channeling to inner child healing. And it's like amazing because I get to now bring experts who now know what to talk about in these places. And I don't need to feel like I need to be the peg that fits all of the different squares and triangles and circles.
Yeah, like everyone should like concentrate on their, I know they call it, I think it's niche, they pronounce it here. So yeah, everyone has their niche or niche. And I think, yeah, if we stuck with that and then allowed ourselves to like see where people are coming from, especially like I find a lot of people they come to me with a question and I'm like, I don't really have the answer for you because I don't think what I'm going to say is going to register. Because everyone has their own journey and their own growth and where they want to be. So I think it's amazing that you're holding. When is that, by the way?
It's all throughout the spring. So everyone is coming in on a different weekend and leading a 2-hour workshop of their choice. I literally told them, I was like, bring whatever you want to be inspired to teach people about. And wow. I think it's super cool. Yeah. In person and virtual. So yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. And yeah, that's really cool. I think people will benefit from that. And it's great that you're holding that space. So really, you know, you're the singularity of oneness there. And these are the fractals. So, that, so yeah, that's wonderful. Brilliant. So I wanted to ask if you could do a reading for me.
Yes. Thank you. I absolutely can. And so as we talked about a little earlier, so angels are basically your higher self is how I view it. It's part of this singularity. It's you at a higher plane and you are basically calling them in to receive guidance. And similarly, how we talk about time is an illusion. Time is the fourth dimension. Time is only, as we perceive it in the human construct, having a definitive past, present, and future. But as we sort of move into higher dimensions and planes of existence, there are multiple timelines all existing simultaneously in the eternal now. And your angels or your higher self see all possible timelines that you as Raul in this body in this time, in this moment, can take. And they will guide you towards what is in your highest good and the highest good of all. They can never cause harm to people and never cause into bring into being anything that you do not want to happen. So who we're calling in are these beings to help direct you and guide you into what is in your highest good. And so what we'll do is a specific area of your life. So I do various types of readings. So we'll just do a very basic 3-card reading. And this is one specific area of your life. It can be in your relationship life, career life, purpose, home, family, whatever, whatever you're curious about, the podcast, anything. And having an intention directs the energy. And so what happens is we will lay out the cards. I will ask you to repeat an angel blessing after me. And we will then, I'll pick 3 cards from your energy, shuffle the cards with your energy intention in them, pick 3, and then go into the reading. And once it's the channel is open, it becomes a open channel. Basically, you are free to ask questions back to me and I will ask it to your higher self and guidance. And I will deliver you the response. And so it can be a dialogue. So it doesn't need to just be, hey, this is what it is. And that's how we go. No, it's just a conversation. So I will ask you, what is your intention or what are you looking for guidance in that I can?
Right now I'm at a crossroads with, I don't know what to do with the podcast in the sense of I want it to become my full-time thing. And I don't know how to do it. You know, is it creating courses? Is it sticking with Patreon? Like those are the type of things that I'm just like totally like questioning right now as I'm trying to find how I can make this full time instead of something that I do as a hobby type of thing.
Sure. Great intention. So I'll do this on a little bit of a mini expedited basis, because usually this takes, you know, it's a longer form thing, but we'll just do this really briefly. So sure. I'll ask you to just get comfortable where you're sitting, close your mm-hmm. eyes, mm-hmm. and just take a few deep breaths in through the nose, down to the belly, exhaling through the mouth. Continue to do that on your own. And as you do this, bring in a feeling of gratitude into your heart. It can be gratitude for anything, your family, your home, the podcast. Let this gratitude now start to expand and wash over you. If you can feel into a color that this gratitude has for you, see if you can feel a color for yourself. As it expands across your entire body, every cell in your body, out of your head, fingertips, and toes into your auric field, elevating and lifting your vibrational energy. In this space, now consciously call in the energy of your guardian angels, spirit guides, beings of love and light energy, and your higher self. As you do so, their presence of unconditional love surrounds you, lifting your energetic frequency even higher. Take one deep breath in through the nose, all the way down to the belly. Exhale through the mouth. And when you're ready, you can return back. Cool. So these cards will be right here, and I am laying them out. They are these orange cards. And if you can just basically visualize your hands on these cards, again, this is what it looks like. Just visualize your hand on this and repeat this angel blessing after me. Thank you, angels.
Thank you, angels.
And energetic beings.
And energetic beings.
Of love and light.
Of love and light.
For revealing to me.
For revealing to me.
What I need to know.
What I need to know.
I'm willing to listen.
I'm willing to listen.
And receive your guidance.
And receive your guidance.
For my highest good and wisdom.
For my highest good and wisdom.
And the highest good of all.
And the highest good of all.
So I say, and so it is.
So I say, and so it is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, angels of Raul, for revealing to Raul through me what he needs to know. For his highest good and wisdom and the highest good of all, may we be clear and open channels of communication, free of any energetic distortion, to deliver him a message regarding his intention as to how to move forward with the podcast to make it his full-time thing. We request a most benevolent outcome to receive your guidance as clear channels for the highest good of all. So we say, and so it is, Taisha into Doe, Taisha into Doe, Taisha into Doe, spoken as it is stated, and so it is done. Thank you. So with your energy and intention now in these cards, I'm going to shuffle them one last time. I'll lay them out. And I'm going to pick three cards from your energy. The first initial message that your angels come through with this is that the gears are turning, is what that means. And so they typically come through in either visions, voices, or felt senses. And there's this energy of gears turning. Change is really about to start coming. Change is starting to percolate through what is about to happen. And the entire overall energy of how you get the show out there, how you create partnerships, what is about to happen, how it's monetized, basically how it's received, and sort of this aspect of partnerships that come with it. Your angels want to acknowledge that a tremendous strength that you have as it pertains to how you've been able to share the podcast and it's just the state of overall being of the show is this sense of profound harmony that you bring and that the show brings to so many people. It brings this sense of inner harmony. And simultaneously, your angels are also providing an aspect of harmony that pushes it forward. in a way that almost feels like it's silk that's being sort of felt, as it's so soft and like felt on the body. It's that feeling of being wrapped in that silk and being wrapped in this harmonious energy that's allowing you to create this feeling of greater resolve in terms of where you want to move it. And it's this feeling of your angels actually have seen that you have a resolve to take it to another level. And they see this desire in you and this aspect of what you bring as it pertains to the harmony that you're able to share and spread with so many. And they want you to remember to lean on that strength. And because what is happening as it really relates to this feeling of having things in a very very like tight and conjoined manner. The way you run things, it's not very like shoddy or like slapped on the wall in different ways and trying different things and just hoping it sticks. It's actually quite methodical. It's actually quite measured and thought out in how you choose to take the next step of action and what exactly that next step is going to be. You sort of lay out potential options. You sort of see and measure, okay, is this one sort of right? Or does this one feel like the one I need to take? Or what are the benefits and chances that this one is actually better? And so that aspect in you that has this organizational resolve to pull it to the next level is the greatest strength that they want you to lean on. What they acknowledge that is in your heart that really wants to come out is a feeling of really putting yourself into action, like lighting this fire within you that's like, okay, like sometimes when things happen in our life, we're like, okay, like, you know, I'll take a step back a little bit. I'll wake up a little late today and it's okay. And, you know, I can give myself a little break. Yeah, that's not where you're at with this right now. It's this feeling of deep connection actually into the solar plexus, deep connection into the fire within you that is now ready to move and direct this energy in a very conscientious way. That's like, all right, this is Raul in action. We're like, we gotta like get out there now. Like, I gotta send out these emails. I gotta make these connections. I gotta talk to these sponsors. I gotta like this is like me laying the groundwork and foundations. It's me putting the structure into the earth to say, okay, now I'm starting to build the house on top of the structure. But the first formulae is that base layer that we are now, we've cleaned out sort of the grounding and we're building now. You're in this phase of building and genuinely putting in the work. And the thing is, it's not going to feel like work because you're actually quite energized to do it. You feel like it's at this stage where you're like, okay, now it's the time to actually do this. And you actually know already the avenue that you want to take. Part of your angel, what your angels are saying to me is you're somewhat looking to this reading as a little bit of a confirmation as to, oh, is this the right thing? Because you want it reflected back to you, but you actually already know. And that energy is ready to come straight from the heart because it's being really like lit on fire by the divine. The last area is going to be sort of around it's sort of a challenge, so to speak, but it's also a focus because as things start to evolve, especially when it comes to, it's kind of twofold. The first fold is that you might be pushing yourself hard. Like you're someone who's really, when they put themselves into action, they go all the way. You don't half-ass it. You're not like, okay, like I'll put in some of the work here. And no, like when you put it in, you put the effort in. And that can often lead sometimes to feeling ground down in the sense of you push yourself really hard and you don't necessarily give your body and mind and life and those around you the same level as compassion as you normally would if you didn't necessarily have this innate intense drive to go and create this next layer of where this is heading. And so what your angels want to say is sort of a focus for you as this gets underway is come back into remembering this aspect of compassion to approach yourself and your loved ones and all that you do with, because it may feel like now there's so much externally happening. I got to talk to these people and I got to send these emails. And it's like, oh, I got to do all this like back end stuff and like this editing. And it's like, it's going to happen so fast. And there's so much that it may start to sort of just like come in on you and what happens from within is like this aspect of deep compassion that you have will start to get challenged because of all the external stuff that's coming in. And so they want you to just be aware of, remember to just give yourself compassion as this unfolds, because it's also not going to be something that you're like, oh, it happens immediately and it's all suddenly fantastic and it happened all within a month. And would you believe that? And it's not going to necessarily happen that way. And so they want you to know that as you go through this process, it is a steady build. The house gets built slowly, a little bit over time, piece by piece. The house wasn't built in a month. It usually takes a season for the house to get built. And then when you move in, there's still going to be some things that you got to fix in the house that maybe aren't totally there. And it's this process that is being worked towards. However, they want to remind you that the biggest strength that you have is this aspect of deep harmony that you bring to all of the listeners, the deep harmony that you bring to the world as part of this, and to remember to align yourself with the reason why you started doing this in the first place, because you are creating a resolve, not just within yourself to help and serve others, but you're also creating this resolve for the mass globe of consciousness. And so use that pillar of strength, because that is going to be your shining beacon as you go ahead and let your heart do the work that you're about to step into.
Wow. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. And I won't say you're wrong in a lot of things. Well, in everything you said, yeah. It was more or less, I was asking as a confirmation. that is true. I do know what I'm going to do. So yeah, that was very interesting. And then I can see, especially the last point that you made, especially, I can see how that can happen. And that's happened kind of like in the past, maybe not too strong, but it's definitely shown its ugly head, so to speak. So yeah, and I imagine the path that I'm taking, it would be 1,000-fold. So I have to learn how to have that compassion for myself and for my loved ones. So yeah, that's interesting, to say the least. Yeah, very, very interesting. I really hope that people actually do approach you and ask for a reading. And the reason why, if I may go into how I felt, especially in the very beginning when we go through that process of the breathing and the kind of visualization and connecting, it was, I don't know, I felt it was rather, maybe because I've been seasoned in meditation, I found it easier, but I did feel like it does come from a place of oneness. And I don't know if that's something that you bring. I didn't have the intention of being one, if I'm honest. That was a very interesting thing that I found. And yeah, and then definitely the people I thought of, the energies that I thought of, are my spiritual teachers. And then the things that you're saying, I was like, yeah, that's exactly how they would tell me. So it's really weird. So that's why I'm like, I'm a bit freaked out at the same time, but it's really strange. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing it. Thank you for sharing your thoughts and what you're feeling, and also allowing this to happen, and your own personal experience being shown on your show to your listeners. And your reaction, where it's sort of like, it's this weird, it's like, how, like, that's a lot of people who experience this for the first time. I just had a few readings today for first time experiencers. And they very similarly, it's almost a sense of, and I ask them, like, do you have any questions? And they're often like, yeah, like the first time people are like, yeah, but like, I feel like I need time to process that, like that, because it comes at you fast in ways that relate to you and hit home. As you say, it's almost like your teachers would say it. It's almost like your loved one would say it, or whoever it is that someone visualizes as they call them in, because it is really truly calling in on that energy of singularity for how it's related to that person's experience, is what I've noticed. And and it's ultimately, I really just fully try to open myself up to be like just a very clear, open channel for whatever is going to come through, no matter how weird or strange it is to me, because I've come to see that if I need to tell someone that they need to cook lasagna for their parents or change the doormat of their sister's house, well, that's what needs to happen. And that's what's supposed to come through. And they're like, how did you know that? I'm like, I don't know. I just got to say it.
Interesting. If I may ask, I know we're running towards the end of the time, but like, do you view the same energy that I would view or the person that you're doing these readings for? Do you see who they've called for? And is that how it happens? Because that's incredible.
Sometimes, yeah. So I need to really, really focus in and just be like immensely concentrated for that to happen. In the mediumship side of what I do, so when someone is really calling in a loved one who has crossed over, and that's a gift that unfolded from my mom's own passing and my desire to connect with my mom. In the mediumship side of what happens, like, yeah, that's like a very prominent, like I have to really focus in, and it drains my energy to the point where I need to rest for like 3 hours after one of them.
Wow.
So it's like incredibly draining. So it depends. It depends how hard I go into that. If I'm really trying to see into that, or I'm just like, okay, they're calling in their angels. I just need to be the messenger for what they're calling in.
Okay. So yeah, it depends on the actual thing. Okay. That's really interesting. I was wondering how that is. And then would you say, like, based on someone's spiritual attainment in their life, do you think, not me or the actual people they're calling, does it tend to be easier for someone who's like, obviously they're calling someone more spiritually evolved for that energy, for guidance? Do you think that's, they're more easier to tap into and to give messages from than someone say, oh no, their next door neighbor?
I actually think it's a direct correlation to the person I am doing the reading for. So it's actually not the person that they are calling in, but it is rather the person themselves. Because if all is one, then they are calling in that energy of what they are connected to, right? So I've noticed that for the more spiritual people, it opens up like a flower. Like I'm like, oh, all right. Like you can really connect to someone's angels that way, depending kind of on that levels of that person's openness.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, no, this has been, I know we're at the end of time, but it was actually really amazing, and not only to experience what you do, but even prior to that, the way you've explained oneness, God, devotion, the way you've explained what you do, it's been a real big eye-opener. I've learned a lot. I think when I go into the editing, I know I'm going to look back and be like, oh, that was an interesting thing. And, there's a lot of nuggets of wisdom. I would suggest to my listeners that, and people who view the podcast, look at Neil's website. I'm going to put it in this show notes and video description. So everyone should take a look. And if you find that you're called to do it, contact Neil. I think you're very approachable. Even the way we've got, I think Vinay just contacted you a few days ago and we got this in. So that tells you how approachable you are. I've had some people give me a hard time and you haven't. And if anyone lives in the New Jersey area, and I know there are people who do because I can see who view my podcast, do check into your yoga studio. Where's your yoga studio? Where's it located?
Yeah, my yoga studio is in Pennington, New Jersey. It's right outside of Princeton. And just let me know. I give different energy healing sessions. I lead different workshops, different retreats in the area, all over the world. Like, just reach out to me, set up a free call. Honestly, I love to just connect with people. It's my favorite part of life, people and the places we get to go. And I just, if you're interested in working with me or any help in any way, or just want to chat, just reach out. It's we can have a fun conversation.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Neil. Thank you for being on the podcast. And we got to have you on again. I know that prior to this call, we talked about we're going to look into time and discuss that. So, I'm going to have you on again for sure. But thank you so much for everything. Thank you for the reading. Thank you for your wisdom. Again, I wish you all the best. You definitely deserve it. Stay blessed. May God bless you always.
May God bless you too. Thank you for having me on, as well as all your listeners. Have an incredible rest of your day wherever you're listening to this from.
Thank you.